Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm talking. Yes, indeed. I'm walking. New me. That's all I know.
Oh.
Yeah, and if I do any more, we'll get sued.
I take it you went and saw the Elvis movie.
Actually, that wasn't Elvis, but anyways.
Yeah, but you were doing the Elvis voice.
But I was going to talk about that in geeking. No. Should we flip the show and do freaking and geeking first, and then talk about it?
Oh no, I just thought just trying to play off what you were doing.
Well, you know, I could do penis jokes, but I don't know if anybody wants those.
No. No, we don't.
We don't?
No.
Prick.
There's a movie coming out this weekend, and by the time this episode drops, it will already be out.
Oh.
It's getting good reviews, and yes, that is Minions: The Return of... No, that's not it.
Crew!
We don't give a shit about Minions. We're a comic book podcast.
I would go see that when the $5 movie hits, or when it's finally on my one of my streaming services.
Yeah, that's something that's going to be on all my streaming services, and I don't want to go to kids' movies and movie theaters.
I would, but because I usually don't think of it. You don't go to theaters anyways. What do you care?
I am going to go see Thor. Love and Thunder, Love and Toaster Ovens.
Oh, Love and Thunder.
Let me fire up the old Google here. Thor, Love and Thunder. Dun, dun, dun.
I got my first report from Adam Vermillion. He is super excited about I will read it. Oh my God. Who shows up in the Thor mid-credits and who they are played by? And that's all he says.
Yep.
Oh, that should be fun. Actually, it's playing now. But you see, we are so dedicated to you, our listeners, that rather than Corey and I take an evening out, get together, which we rarely do, and go to see a movie, I'm sitting in the depths of the Writer Estate. Corey is somewhere on the Strode compound doing this here podcast rather than seeing the movie together. That's just how we roll. Mm-hmm. Because I have no idea when the hell I'm going to go see it, but I figure, whatever, I got time.
I thought we could talk about the Thor comic, because I looked over our 565 episodes. We really have not done a spotlight on the mighty Thor.
Oh, because I was like already, because I had like everything dialed up, because, you know, Thor is from Old Norse, a prominent god in German paganism. In North mythology, he's a hammer-wielding god associated with lightning, thunderstorms, sacred groves and trees, strength, protection of mankind, hallowing, and fertility. I had quite a dissertation of Thor. You know, historical assertions in the Roman era into the Viking age, the post-Viking age, archaeological records, origins, theories, interpolations. But if you want to go just with the comic, fine, yeah. I'll close these windows. All right, this isn't even Ask the Strode, but what is the comic book Marvel Thor's first appearance?
That would be... way back in the Golden Age. But for the Silver Age, the Thor that we know, it was Journey into Mystery number 83, drawn by Jack Kirby, written by Larry Lieber, with a plot from Stan Lee.
Now, in case you do want to get one, right now you can get an 8.0 on eBay for $79,950, which is actually pretty close to the near mint price. If you don't mind dropping an entire grade, going to 7.0, a mere $57,500. So there's bargains to be had. And that dropped, I believe, August 1962 for you time travelers out there. And
Hold on.
Wow, that was its cover date, I should say.
No, it was June 1962 because it's in the omnibus that just came out.
Yeah, which is why why you were busy, you know, stroking your omnibus. I quickly recovered and said it was the cover date. Now, I have a couple quotes here from Stan Lee where he was talking in 2002 about Thor's genesis early in the Marvel pantheon following the creation of the Hulk. And I'm just going to read his quote. How do you make someone stronger than the strongest person? It finally came to me. Don't make him human. Make him a god. I decided readers were already pretty familiar with the Greek and Roman gods. Might be fun to delve into the old Norse legends. Besides, I pictured Norse gods looking like Vikings of old, with the flowing beards, horned helmets, and battle clubs. Journey into Mystery needed a shot in the arm, so I picked Thor to headline the book. After writing an outline depicting the story and the characters I had in mind, I asked my brother Larry to write the script because I didn't have the time. It was only natural for me to assign the penciling to Jack Kirby. Now, in the 1984 Kirby interview, he says, and again, this is Jack's words, I did a version of Thor for DC in the 50s before I did him for Marvel. Thor at Marvel because I was forever enamored of legends, which is why I knew about Baldur, Heimdall, and Odin. I tried to update Thor and put him into a superhero costume, but he was still Thor. The story was included in Tales of the Unexpected, number 16 from 1957. Although the character had different designs, some details would be reused. Oh, the quote stopped.
I don't know.
Well, either that or Kirby's talking to himself in the third person because he goes, the story was included, again, Tales of the Unexpected, 16 from 1957. And although the character had different designs, some details would be reused by Kirby when he created the Marvel Comics version. And in a 1992 interview, Kirby said, I knew the Thor legends very well, but I wanted to modernize them. I felt that might be a new thing for comics, taking the old legends and modernizing them. A 13-page feature the mighty Thor. And it went, I'm trying to think, how many issues of Journey into Mystery did that? Oh, by the way, just for you trivia buffs, Journey into Mystery number one was 1952. So the series had been going quite some time before Stan figured he needed a shot in the arm. And from 83 through
125, I believe.
Yep. And then it switched over to its own title, which a lot of Marvel Comics were kind of doing. They were dropping that name. So you go to Thor 126, which, by the way, you can have for a steal. A 9.2 copy on eBay is $2,795. Or if you want an unrestored 9.6, that hasn't been slabbed. Somebody's got it up for, the bid will be over with by the time the podcast is. He's starting it at about $4,000. So save your keys. I did not. I refer to the infamous X collection that Pat Gruber and myself had bought way back when we were first starting out as Weekend Warriors, because we had a guy who had actually collected these, and his Journey into Mystery that we had looked like someone put a cheese grater on it and scraped the cover off it. It wasn't torn or ripped or gouged. It was just like the cover was gone. And we also had, of course, the Thor 126, which, of course, has Thor and Hercules going head-to-head. And I know I've had that because for a while I collected those. Don't have them anymore. Stupid joke.
There was also a Thor in the 40s from Fox Feature Syndicate, where it was a mortal man given strange lightning powers by the Norse gods. Grant Farrell was chosen by the real Thor, looking down on humanity from his perch in Valhalla. He decided to give his powers to a mortal. Kirby liked using gods in his work, and I have talked about that. And if I start talking about it, we won't talk about Thor.
Yep.
But the early issues of Thor were very different. And it was clear reading them that Kirby didn't put a lot of effort and energy into it until Stan came back. Basically, Stan was just kind of editing. And when Larry Lieber was pulled to do other stuff and Stan came in, Kirby started to slowly strip away the superhero stuff and move Thor more toward Asgard, so that by the time Journey into Mystery had changed its name, Thor very rarely spent time on Earth. And from what Kirby and Stambo said is Kirby much preferred doing stuff in outer space and Asgard, and Stan would kind of force him, hey, we got to do some stories on Earth. And especially when you read those stories, it's really clear that, boy, Jack doesn't want to do this superhero stuff with this character anymore. He wants to play in Asgard. He wants to deal with Odin and Loki and Baldur and the Warriors 3 and Sif and all that. And through the 60s, Thor was usually the number 3 selling comic.
I was just looking up here on Atomic Avenue here. It says, okay, so Journey to Mystery 83, first Thor, first Donald Blake. And then that's the origin, of course. 84, first Executioner, first Loki. Then 85, you got Baldur, Heimdall, and Odin appear. So they appeared fairly quick.
But they weren't used a lot in those early issues. Loki became his main bad guy. But it was Loki coming down to Earth and messing with stuff.
Frigga appeared in 92. So, yeah, just it's kind of interesting because you watch the prices, how they jump because of that.
And in the 60s, Marvel sales, it was usually Fantastic Four and Spider-Man on top. Fantastic Four was the number one selling comic until Romita had kind of been on Spider-Man for a while. It slowly took over the Fantastic Four spot. So it was Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Thor, and then the anthology series would be underneath that.
And don't forget, they put Thor in the Avengers as one of the founding members.
And then pulled him right out with issue 16.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about that.
That was about a year and a half, so it was there for a while.
How we think of the Avengers as Marvel's core superhero team. But pretty much after issue 16, all the way up to in the 80s, it was more, you know, okay, maybe you could have Captain America. Maybe you could have Iron Man. Thor would show up once in a blue moon, but it was mostly, here's a bunch of second string characters.
Yeah.
It wasn't until around issue 100 that the Avengers became, all right, this is the powerhouse of the Marvel Universe. And that kind of coincided with bringing Thor in. And if you read those issues of Thor, there are things where it really, Kirby is throwing all sorts of cosmic stuff into the mix, just like he did in Fantastic Four. But I think because of the rut Thor got into after Kirby left, we tend to forget that. Because after Kirby left, you tended to get very similar stories of Odin has to go somewhere or sleep or do something. Loki takes over Asgard. Thor has to figure out a way to beat him. Odin comes back. Oh, why did these horrible things happen when I left?
So the question is, does the Strode know who penciled after Jack Kirby left?
Neil Adams did a few issues.
Two.
And
180, 181. Yep.
And then John Buscema took over.
Yep.
He stayed on it forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he also pushed really hard that they never be on Earth.
Now let's ask, let's switch gears here. What was the first time that you bought and started collecting Thor?
The first issue of Thor I bought was number 244. And the reason I did, I, you know, started with Fantastic Four and Spider-Man. But at the time it was, well, Thor is one of the big hitters. So you got to read that. Hulk is one of the big hitters. You got to read that. Iron Man was thought of as kind of a secondary character. You'd pick that up if you had a little extra money. Captain America, well, Kirby saw Captain America. Got to buy that. But Thor was one that I bought because it was considered one of the core Marvel books. And when I started reading it, it was John Buscema and Len Wein. And Len had a really long run on the book, longer than almost any other book he did at Marvel, I think. And then when he left, Roy Thomas took over. And if Roy Thomas wrote a book, you knew it was core Marvel Universe. So Thor was a book that I bought because, oh, this is core of the Marvel Universe. And then after Roy Thomas left, the book lost its way, in my opinion. Doug Mensch is a great writer, but he was never any good at the, what I want to call the core Marvel books. I didn't like his run on the Fantastic Four. I didn't like his run on Thor. It was the other stuff, the Moon Knights, the Master of Kung Fu, things like that, that I think he did much better at. Now, Joe, when did you start reading Thor?
Well, Thor I knew of because of Avengers, Marvel team up probably more, maybe Marvel 2-in-1 a little less. I don't know if there was ever there. But he was never a character I jumped in on. I think I picked up issue 300, didn't have an effing clue what was going on. And I didn't jump on until Walt Simonson's run. And again, this is one of those things where Pat and I were ordering things to sell. And we were aware of how big 337 was coming. And we ordered multiple copies. But even that first issue just blew me away. Walt Simonson was doing it. It was the first appearance of Beta Ray Bill. You know, Nick Fury comes out of nowhere, kidnaps Donald Blake. They grab the cane from him. And he's explaining, hey, I need your help. We got this big UFO coming at us. We don't know what's going on. And just the little things like where he gets his cane back, so he changes into his alter ego. Boom, 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 boom. And Nefir's like, holy cow, why didn't you warn me? And he, thou didn't ask. And of course, the big thing, and I don't think this is ruining a spoiler from 1983, is by the end of the issue, Beta Ray Bill had picked up Thor's hammer, turned into the beloved horse face thing that we know him as, and consequently disappeared as he was summoned back to Asgard by Odin, leaving Donald Blake screaming in the rain, Father! What a start. What a long 30 days till 338 came out. And of course, when it did, it just didn't stop. And that was, for me, the first run and the first time I really followed and cared for Thor. I did try to hang on after he left. Tom DeFalco had some interesting ideas. Ron Frenz was aping Kirby, which I thought was annoying. And I know we've talked about this in either off podcast or way beyond in the past, but it was, I guess he was told to.
Yes.
To ape. Oh, dumb. But whatever. Yeah, it I hung with it, I think, until issue 400, and then I think I bailed. And it was like hit or miss. I came back like when he was fighting Doom. I think I came back when Eric Matheson replaced Thor. And this is all fuzzy because it was like, yeah, I might have been just reading it to read it. you know, you had to jump in because in 411, 412, you had the first appearance of the New Warriors. And that was big. You had Acts of Vengeance. That was big. But I really, the other runs that got me, and I'm just going to mention it, and then we can stop, and Corey, if you need to catch up. I really didn't start collecting Thor other than, like, Force of Habit until Straczynski took over. And I think that's when... See, now my brain's... Was he doing it before Onslaught, or...
No, long after. Long after. Okay.
Because that's what I... That's when I remember... Because there was a whole year that there was no Thor.
Yeah.
And then the hammer lands in the middle of New Mexico. And that's when Straczynski, I believe, started.
Yep.
Or his run started. So, yeah, for a while, you know, we went Thorless. The last we saw, he disappeared with Dr. Doom. Although Doom shows up and tries to lift the hammer, thinking, I thought I could, and he couldn't. Was that played out in the Fantastic Four?
Well, let me fill you in on you jumped about 15 years.
Yeah, because the 15 years between Simonson and Thor were, I mean, Thunderstrike, yeah, but it was a non-Thor. It just doesn't sit in my memory.
Yeah, what it was, Tom DeFalco, who was editor-in-chief at Marvel during a lot of this run, took over after Simonson. And he and Ron Frenz kind of turned it back into a superhero book. And it was very much set on Earth with very little having to do with Asgard. And like they did a lot of times, they had Thor replaced by somebody else. Eric Masterson.
Which was a common thing in the, when was that, mid-80s, wasn't it?
Yeah, mid-80s.
Yeah.
And then they spun him off into his own series. And what Ron Frenz has said is when they spun him off into his own series, they didn't know how long the series would last, but they knew they wanted to have him die in the last issue so that his story was complete. But the sales on Thor slowly dwindled down. It didn't really get the huge bump during the comic boom of the early 90s. It kind of stayed where it was. It was a mid-selling Marvel superhero book. And when Marvel flooded the market and then sales started to drop, Thor dropped as well. They tried doing a big revamp by bringing in Warren Ellis and Mike Deodato. But it didn't save the book.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, towards the... That was right before Onslaught.
Right before Onslaught. Yep. And then with Onslaught, that was the story to give four books over to the Image guys. And Thor did not have his own book. He was a supporting character. He was in the Avengers. But he wasn't one of the four books that the Image boys did. And when it came back, they had The Heroes Reborn. They gave it to Dan Jurgens. And that was Dan Jurgens' longest book that he did for Marvel, because one of the reasons Dan Jurgens came to Marvel was he wanted to do Spider-Man. They gave him his own Spider-Man book, and he quit because it was in the middle of the Clone Saga, and he was just doing Ben Reilly stories, and he was like, I hate this. I hate being involved in this. I don't want to be involved in this Clone Saga. So he did Thor, which was a lot like his Superman run. And again, he didn't play in Asgard much. He did the superhero stuff. And at the end of that run, rather than, okay, here's the next person to take over Thor, the sales weren't that great, so they let Thor end. And it was one of the few books that had been around since the beginning of Marvel that had ended. And for a couple of years, you kept hearing rumors of, oh, this person has put in a pitch, but it didn't get didn't get picked up. There were people who were pitching Thor series, including Neil Gaiman. But instead, Neil Gaiman decided to do the 1602 miniseries.
Never last.
And J. Michael Straczynski put in a pitch for Thor. It got accepted. He did a run on Thor, but like a lot of J. Michael Straczynski stuff, he didn't finish it. As it got near the end, Joe would know more about this than me, but he had a kind of a falling out with Marvel and went over to DC to do a Superman run and a Wonder Woman run. And his last issue of Thor took months before it finally came out. And it had been so long, they had to do a special one shot. I think it was called Thor Finale or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah. If you read his book, his autobiography, you'll understand more of why he does that. He's, you know, this is my story. He's not above editorial, you know, help, but he's not going to, if somebody comes down and says, okay, I got this A, B, C to Z, and they say, no, we want it changed so it's A, B, W, P. No, he doesn't do that. And he got burned in Spider-Man by that Sins of the Father, which even today is derided as crap.
It's a horrible, horrible story.
Oh, and he wanted to take his name off it. He wanted to take his name off Brand New Day, and he got talked into it. You don't get to talk him into that anymore. You know, not especially nowadays. I think he's probably through dabbling in comics because he's screenwriting now. And he does
stuff for AWA.
Yeah, it's his own company. He's not going to get overruled.
No,
He may come back and do things, but I mean, he just finished writing the synopsis for the reboot of Babylon 5. Now it just waits to see what happens with CW. Does it get sold to Discovery? Will they come in and kill it? Whatever. So. But if you read the book, you understand it's the ego of the writer. He's like, I don't need this crap, this toxicity. You paid me to do the job. I do it. You want to change it, you change it. You know, so yeah, I can see why he kind of lost his, how would we say it in wrestling? Lost his smile.
He lost his smile.
He did. Not only for that, but also probably at DC as well.
Well, at DC, and I've said this before, it really kind of irritates me what he did at DC.
You didn't read his book, did you?
No, but here's why it irritates me. It doesn't have anything to do with his book or editorial or whatever.
Actually, well, finish your thought and I'll tell you why you're wrong.
He pitched a 12-issue series for both Superman and Wonder Woman. He did the first six issues and forced DC to put his name on the other six issues, and the writer who did the work was not given credit. I don't care what his excuse is. If you don't give the writer credit, if you're having a ghostwriter, I can understand having a ghostwriter if you're a celebrity or if it's a book series, but at comics, it's, look, we're selling it under his name and somebody else is doing the writing. I'm sorry, that's just wrong, and there's no excuse for it. Maybe if he got screwed over by editorial, that's fine. But the fact that his name was still on it and he forced that issue, nah, I'm not okay with that.
That makes sense. No, but if you do read the book, you've read the Superman stories he wrote, there's one that's very chilling, that is very close to life for him. And again, we're drifting way off course, but it's just one of those, you know, you're gonna read the book and you read that issue and you're never gonna look at it again. It's kind of like when you find the discovery, the meaning behind your favorite songs, and you're like, "Ah, how are you supposed to enjoy it?" No, he's singing about the worst time of his life, you know. But was he Thor-y? There's your segue back.
What happened with Thor was, okay, Matt Fraction pitched an idea, and his Thor run, which I have here in my hand, actually, because the omnibus just came out, leads up to the crossover Fear Itself. And everything he did on his run led up to that. It was pitched as a complete story. And Thor kind of has become where people pitch long-term stories. Because after that was the Jason Aaron story, which they draw a lot for Thor Love and Thunder from. Except Thor Love and Thunder looks like a comedy. The Thor story by Jason Aaron is not funny. You have Gore the God Butcher, who has traveled the universe destroying pantheons of gods. You have Jane Foster, who was Thor's girlfriend way, way back. And when they kind of moved Thor to Asgard, the whole Jane Foster thing was dropped, because Jane Foster was very much an old school Marvel girlfriend who, I feel bad for Don Blake, but Thor is dreamy. And that whole thing was just stolen from Superman. And then it turned into Thor was in love with Jane Foster, but Odin would not allow him to marry a mortal. So he would do shitty things to Jane Foster. And then finally they were like, yeah, get rid of Jane Foster. We're bringing in Sif, who's from the Norse mythos. That way, we can't have Thor be in Asgard for 24 issues while Jane Foster's on Earth pining away for him. Sif can draw a sword and be by his side. Done.
Oh, I just had her first appearance lined up too, but let's see if I can find it. Atomic Avenue. It was in the actual Thor After Journey into Mystery.
Yeah.
Let's see.
So Jane Foster had kind of been written out of the book. She would pop up now and then. You know, kind of somebody would want to do a nostalgia story. Whatever happened to Jane Foster? Oh, she's no longer a nurse. She's a doctor now. But what Jason Aaron did, he brought her back and had a story about how she had developed cancer. And the way he wrote that, those early stories were just heartbreaking. And it was about how Thor couldn't help her. Thor's a god. He has all these powers, but he can't do anything about this mortal disease.
Here we go. Sif, Journey into Mystery 102. That was her when she was brought in.
And then Jason Aaron kind of twists it with, okay, Thor's not worthy anymore. And I'm not telling you why. But Jane Foster is. However, when Jane Foster turns into Thor, she's healthy and everything. But when she turns they've done to arrest that cancer, like whatever chemotherapy, whatever they've done, she turns back and whatever chemotherapy or therapy they've done has been erased.
See, what you're forgetting, though, is when that hit, we were given the female Thor. We had no idea who it was until that last issue. And then Secret Wars happened, where Doom basically made Battleworld. So, and that was the killer reveal, because we finally find out who this other Thor is, and it's Jane Foster on the floor, on her knees, just totally devastated by cancer. Just a stunning, stunning image. And then, boom, the world's over. I will say this on Jason Aaron's run, because I just finished reading it, and it is fan-frickin-tastic. I mean, I read the, oh, where is it? It was just here a minute ago. I had the entire run through the collected editions. And then I bought the War of the Realms Omnibus, which is something I threatened to do when War of the Realms came out. Because, again, I read War of the Realms. It's like watching Return of the Jedi if you hadn't watched Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. Yeah, it's interesting. But, boy, when you read Aaron's run, and what was it, 7 years?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And what is amazing as we're talking about it, and we're just talking about the Jane Foster part. We haven't talked about the whole run. He ties into Original Sin crossover. He ties into, again, the Secret Wars. And it's a key tie-in with Thor's. It ties into the Thor from the Ultimate Universe. It's just brilliant. And you question,
You're also forgetting.
I know I'm forgetting something.
Tied in with Secret Empire.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, that was the other one. Just utterly amazing. And, you know, it's not only that he sits down and he's like, okay, I would love to talk to him and just hear what he's saying. Because I'm doing this. I'm tying into all these things. But he had to see him coming. And it's like, well, how can I make this better? And it's not just like, you know, the Red Skies syndrome where it's like, well, I'm crossing over to crossover. And we've talked in the past about certain creators when they, okay, you have to do this crossover. And it just was
Peter
like forced
David
upon him.
Really big on that, where it's okay, if I got to be in the crossover, I'm just going to mention it and move on.
Yeah. And sometimes, like even when John Byrne did it in Fantastic Four with like Secret Wars too, his tie-ins ended up being more interesting than the actual Secret Wars by accident, you know. No, I can't say enough positive about Jason Aaron's run. It always cracks me up because I'm on a number of Facebooks and you always get the old guys who are like, ah, oh, they don't write comics the way they used to. I said, yeah, they're better. They're planned out. They have consequences. They're not just fight two part. You know, it's not like watching, I don't know, your favorite sitcom or whatever, where things happen, but it has to be reset to the way the sandbox was at the end of the episode. It's not that way anymore. Matter of fact, kudos to who's writing Thor now? I had a copy of it. I don't want to. But he's running off what Aaron did. So Aaron didn't have to, like, reset the sandbox. The guy just said, no, I'll take what you got and I'll run with it. And he did. And a lot of you weren't paying attention because that Thor number one went bug nuts in price because everybody was like, oh, 7 years of Aaron, that's enough. I'm not going to pick up the new Thor. Foolish mortals.
So, for me, once Tom DeFalco took over and turned it into just kind of a superhero series, I dropped it. It was one of the first Marvel books that I'd been reading a long time that I went, yeah, I think I could drop this. And then I would pick it up if I liked the creators on it. I liked the JMS storyline. I was pissed I had to wait so long for the ending.
You know, and although I came to his defense, I don't even remember the ending, to tell you the truth.
And that's one of the problems where if a story, you know, the comic was coming out every month, and then all of a sudden it's okay, there's no Thor coming. There's no Thor coming. There's no Thor coming. There's no Thor. By the time the end came out, that could have been the greatest ending in the world, but it didn't matter because you'd lost all the momentum. Matt Fraction, I love Matt Fraction, and I'm glad that I picked up this Thor Omnibus. Boy, this is a thick mother, too. How many pages? Does it tell me how many pages it is? No. That's one problem I have with the omnibuses. It doesn't say how many pages, but this is one thick book. And Jason Aaron's Thor run was fantastic. That's actually the book where I went, all right, I need to read everything Jason Aaron's ever done. The current writer, again, I've learned my lesson. I'm going to wait and read it in an omnibus because people go nuts. Oh, this issue came out. Now it's worth a lot because it introduces this character. Oh, boy, it's really cool. Well, I'm going to wait till it's all one book.
Not me. This is one of the few I actually enjoy a month to month. Now, again, I may get to a point like I did with Avengers where I was like, I don't remember what happened last month. That's usually a sign I'm going to drop a book. But so far with Thor, I mean, granted, the current fight between him and Thor or him and Hulk, I'm kind of like, yeah, not really digging this that much. But
by the way, it's Donny Cates who's currently writing it.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going through all the pages and the place I usually go for my information is kind of frozen up, so I can't get onto it. So Corey and I give it a buy.
So with Thor, I think one of the things that I want to point out to people, if you like that Kirby Fantastic Four run, and a lot of people talk about how that was the greatest run of comics, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I've gone back and I've read Thor, and once you get everything in place, the early issues of the Fantastic Four are a little clunky, but they have this wonderful charm to them because whatever the cliche is, they're going to go at a right angle to it. With Thor, it was very much, we're going to play with the Superman cliche. Until eventually Kirby settled in and went, all right, I like this Asgard stuff. I don't like this, you know, superhero knockoff of Superman. And by the time you get to Thor 126, he and Lee are firing on all cylinders. And I would say that other than the fact that the Loki plots get a little repetitive, I would say from 125 to about 175, it's just as good as the Cosmic Fantastic Four. And I would say my favorite Kirby story during the Silver Age is Thor 154 to 157, the Mangog story.
Oh, I still get chills looking at Kirby's art on Mangog. It just, something about, I mean, that is nightmare material to me. Amazing storyline.
People now, often talk about the Galactus trilogy as, you know, the greatest. I think that Mangog story is better. My only problem is the cop-out ending.
Yeah.
Because however, the entire story is Mangog is coming. He tears through the trolls. He tears through the giants. The Thor and the other warriors of Asgard are fighting him, trying to stop him from getting to Asgard. And they're failing and they're failing. And Mangog is just winning. No matter what they throw at him, he's winning. He's coming to destroy Asgard. He's going to draw the Odin sword and cause the destruction of Asgard. And boy, that cover on 157. The camera's way up above. And you've got Thor, the Warriors 3, Sif, and Baldur defending that sword against whatever is coming. They don't show Mangog. We see it through Mangog's eyes of, yeah, I'm about to wipe you all out. That story is so good that they stole it for a number of different books. Death of Superman. I still think Nothing Could Stop the Juggernaut is a knockoff.
Now, before we get too far, this is the second time you brought up Superman. Let's go to JLA Avengers crossover. What do you think of the fight between Thor and Superman?
I thought it was a great fight. Either one should win, except there's one problem. We've had Superman knock the crap out of Hulk. Well, Thor and Hulk are evenly matched. Every fight they've had, they're evenly matched. So if you go by that, Superman is stronger than Thor.
With the exception of the magical component.
Right.
Which might even them out a little bit more.
That would be the hammer.
Yeah.
Which, in a way, is it really magic? He controls natural forces because he's a god.
I don't know. It used to be with Superman, a magic, oh, fall over, you're dead.
Right.
You know, so I but thought it was a fun fight.
Is Thor magic, or is it because he's a god who controls, you know, he's the thunder god. He controls thunder and lightning and weather and things like that. Would that really be magic if he's the god who controls it?
And then you also have to figure out, like you said, they gave Superman the magic weakness because they didn't have anything else to give him.
Yeah.
So, you know, oh my God, you're magic. I must fall over.
Flump. Well, and not everybody can have kryptonite, even though there were like 40 different kinds of kryptonite.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. But in a lot of ways, Thor is the biggest badass of the Marvel Universe in that. Maybe the Hulk can beat him. Maybe he can't. But when Thor shows up in the Avengers, you know shit got real.
Yeah. I do like sometimes the light continuity between it, especially when stuff's going on in Thor's life and he can't be in the Avengers. They're like, where is Thor? Although my favorite is way, way back in the Avenger when they're talking about where is everybody? And they say, well, Iron Man's doing this and Tales to Astonish. And Captain America is doing this and Tales from Suspense. And Thor, who knows what Thor is doing?
What's Thor doing? We don't know.
Who knows what Thor is doing? Not even a check-in journey in the mystery. Or, you know.
I also like how in the movies, oh, he's not a god. He's this extra-dimensional being that humans looked at and thought were gods. In the Marvel Universe, nope, he's a god. And somebody tried to school Jason Aaron about it on Twitter a while back. They were like, well, Thor's not really a god, blah, 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 blah. And Jason Aaron went, nah, he's a god.
I always liked the way they did it in Ultimate Universe, too, you know, because everybody thought, he's just a hippie. He's pretty damn strong, though. And, yeah, he was a god. It just, we couldn't see Loki when Loki was busy doing stuff.
So they got rid of Don Blake pretty early, to the point where they even did an issue saying, yeah, Don Blake, that was a punishment that Odin gave Thor. Joe, do you think that Thor should be an Earth-based hero or a Asgard-based hero or a cosmic-based hero?
Well, the way he is now, cosmic, because he's not only got Galactus's power, he is the Odin son. He's got Odin's power. Because Odin's dead again. And it wasn't. He didn't get the Odin power before because Odin wasn't ready to give up. And then he finally did and died. And so Thor is just basically so overpowered. You know, in my brain, back when I was all excited about X-Men Krakatoa, I thought there should be like a embassy between Asgard and Krakoa. I can't even say the name. In X-Men. And I could, you know, there's got to be a fight, of course, and I could just see that Thor coming down and Magneto, you know, okay, I'm going to stop you with my magic or with my magnetic powers, and Thor is going to be, I am not the Thor you have fought. And he basically, you know, just kicks Magneto's ass. Because you think about all the fights we've talked about, this Thor is on a totally different level than we've seen him, which is probably why I'm excited to see where it's going. Because you think, okay, well, let's go back to where he was in the 60s, where a top, you know, Absorbing Man gives him trouble. Mr. Hyde gives him trouble. Juggernaut gives him trouble. Yeah, nah. Seen it, been there. There's 15 years of Thor comics I haven't read that I can pick up on Marvel Unlimited. How about you, Corey? What do you think on that?
I think the Cosmic Thor is my favorite. And it's really hard for people to do an Asgard-based series because so much has already been tread with how many times have we had a Ragnarok? They've done Ragnarok over and over and over to the point where please don't ever do another Ragnarok story. Please don't ever do another story where Loki's in charge of Asgard. Please don't ever do another story about the Greek gods being mad at the Norse gods. But the cosmic stuff, especially when it's done in kind of that weird style. One of the first long-running arcs was The Search for Odin when I was a kid. Thor, the Warriors Three, and Sif take off in a Viking ship sailing across the universe out in space. And even as a kid, I was like, that is messed up and weird, and I love it. Because it's not, they need a spaceship or they need this. No, they're gods. They just, let's get our Viking boat and set sail across the universe. That oddness was what sold me on Thor. And then I went back and I read the Kirby stuff. And I think in a lot of ways, Kirby and Walt Simonson are the only ones who've ever done good Asgard stories. Kirby, yeah. Because he was Kirby. He was throwing all sorts of weird crap at it. And Simonson, because he had an idea based on myth, based on the giants and Surtur, the fire giant, yeah. And everything. And
Asgard just wasn't a floating rock in space. It was an entire world.
Yeah.
And I agree. I mean, there were times I wanted to, when Thor came back to Earth and started fighting people on Earth, I was like, I want to go back to Asgard and see what's going on.
Yeah.
He made everybody interesting. Even to this day, I'm still trying to think of what happened to that girl there were the twins whose parents died on Earth, and Thor brought them to Asgard to live with Volstead. And it's like, as far as I know, we've never seen him before, but I would love to see them again. But, and it turned Asgard into not just a bunch of background characters who rush out to fight, but actually a fleshed out world that was very, very interesting. And of course,
it had giants and trolls elves and all these old mythological characters that people have a lot of trouble with. It's rare that we get good stories of those characters. So, and you know who's also really good at stuff, Joe?
Well, no.
These guys, our sponsors. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files that backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/3ku, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a one-month plan, a two-year plan, a one-year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And I'm good at stuff, too. It's good. I need to start bragging about myself because, oh, my gosh, do I do a lot of stuff like all of this. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause Basically, because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. Joe does a lot of stuff, too. Matter of fact, we've gotten to his favorite part of the show. Joe, what's going on the eBays?
All sorts of stuff going on. And thank you, everybody, who actually listened to my whiny plea last week to actually send me a couple messages. We did a couple deals, so it's kind of fun. Some of the things that sold from Paper Cuts, I had a Tales from the Crypt number one from 2007, Avatar gold foil logo, Lady Death versus Pandora. One of my favorite sells, from 1969, Harvey Comics, Little Audrey and Melvin. And I gave the guy a deal on it, and he sent me a note. Thank you. I have the color guides for this issue, so it'll be nice to have the comic as well. Thanks, David and Tree. Thank you for buying for me. A couple graphic novels went. Batman Dark Knight Volume 4, Clay Hardcover from 2014. World of Flashpoint featuring Batman. Softcover 2012, a deluxe edition Green Arrow hardcover from 2015. Some back to the comics. I had a copy of Scorch number one, the Todd McFarlane variant cover, went kind of cheap. 1972, a Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane number 124. Great cover where Superman's tied up and how would you say, leopard skin, what Lois Lane is being told by the Amazonians, you must kill him. Oh, yeah, whatever. Lest you think it's all DC and fun, well, Bedtime Stories for Impressionable Children, number one from Moonstone, the cheaper of the two covers. I have the more expensive of the two. And the last thing, a couple things that were kind of neat. I had a signed ash can. Well, I guess this is growing up. Signed by Scott Luhmann and Brandy Drake. So I don't know where I picked this thing up from, but and I thought for a minute I sold it back to him, which I would have felt really weird about. But somebody else bought it. And the final things I'm going to talk about, I sold something called Rio Rita, a one-shot 1994 from AC Comics, which is a Femme Force tie-in. It was kind of different size, more not quite digest size. Was like 8.5 by 8, so kind of I don't know, just a really weird size, but surprisingly expensive for Femme Force crossover. I just don't know if a lot of people passed it because of the size. There's always been things like that where people will pass on something because it doesn't quite fit comic book size. Then they become silly expensive. Final thing I talked about is the Amazing Cynical Man softcover by Matt Feazell from 2003. A lot of these things I gave deals on because people just ask. And, you know, I like to deliver. I've been putting stuff up, too, from my old friend and employee, Mike. I got a hold of his. Yeah, I think, Corey, you remember these. I think Marvel did a series of things. The first one was a 40 Years of Spider-Man CD-ROM collector.
I have them.
Yeah, all 11. I have a set somewhere, too. At least I think I do. I haven't seen it in a while. But I had that from Mike. I got the Marvel 44 Years of Fantastic Four DVD-ROM. And then I had two sealed versions. One was a Marvel 40 Years of X-Men DVD-ROM collector edition. The other one was the Avenger one. And of all of them, the Avenger one was the most expensive because I think by that time nobody was buying them because 2005, I don't know if streaming was coming online yet or like Marvel Unlimited, that type of stuff. But these are all up. They're all making offer as well as various variant covers. A couple surprisingly expensive ones I got. Action Comics, the New 52, number 3, black and white. Regs Morales variant cover. I think this was one of those like 1 in 100 or 1 in 200 covers. And then you jump forward a little bit. Action Comics number 31, the Batman 66 Mike Elrod variant cover. These are all up. They are all ready to go in addition to all sorts of other fun things. And you think I'm done now? Well, we'll talk when we get to geeking. In the meantime, you know what to do. Crazy Comics and Stuff is the name of the store. Crazy is the name, K-R-A-Y-Z.
Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I obsessively refresh my browser, hoping to find news on Final Fantasy 16 because they haven't said anything about it in months.
Oh, I know that. It, be careful, though. I did that for Duke Nukem, and boy, when that came out,
P-U. No, it's Freaking and Geeking, Joe. What are you freaking on?
I had a really small box day this week. And maybe it ties back into that one month where we were like, oh, man, I got nothing coming out. But, I mean, there were no omnibuses. There were not many graphic novels, not many comics. I really am sweating it because, boy, Marvel's still canceling books left and right out of their June schedule. So, that month, man, it's like I'm going to get no Marvel comics for that month. The other thing that freaked me out is that I got the previews, but I don't think Marvel's DC or Marvel supplements have shipped. And this will get onto the geeking side of things because I've visited quite a few stores. Nobody's got the Marvel or DC supplements. So they have not shipped, and it's already July 7th. Or if they have shipped, they're a very, very small supply. And Corey and I want to do a preview show next week. And we ain't got it. Ugh. Oh, well. That's it. That's pretty much it for me freaking-wise. Now I'm going to crack open my favorite Ocean Spray Starkling Diet Cranberry only 10-calorie juice because my mouth is really dry. While Corey tells us what he's freaking on.
Starting with some serious bad news. Pat McCallum, co-founder of Wizard, A Guide to Comics in 1991, and then he got, when Wizard went away, he got picked up by Dan DiDio to be an editor at DC. He passed away this week. No details are listed anywhere, but a couple of his friends have said that he did take his own life. No details. I do want to talk a little about him. Pat started his career working at Garib Sheamus's parents' comic shop. And he wrote a newsletter for the people at the shop, and it became so popular that the Sheamuses decided, hey, we should turn this into a magazine. And that was kind of where Wizard Magazine came from. He had a specific style that really resonated with people at the time. There were times when Wizard outsold every comic on the stands, including the X-Men. And I remember at Joe's shop.
And I'll vouch for that, too, because what was nice about it is Wizard, if I ordered 50, for every 25, I got like a special comic. And then they would turn around and ship me another 25, 30, totally returnable. And wouldn't you know it, they sold.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it had to do with the writing style that he used, which was kind of a, this sounds bad, but it was kind of a frat boy nerd style. You know, very much, you know, we like comics and we like guns and we like explosions and we like babes. Very 90s style. And it really worked for the magazine. I was not a huge fan of Wizard, but I appreciated what they did. I was more an Amazing Heroes guy, and Wizard basically killed Amazing Heroes dead. I worked at Shinders when Wizard started coming out, and before Wizard, Amazing Heroes sold okay, because it was where you could read about upcoming comics and interviews with creators and articles about what was coming up. They even had a checklist. Here's what's coming in the next month. Wizard came out and focused on what books were going to be hot, what books were hot, interviewing a lot of younger creators, usually having, you know, the hot young creators doing covers and everything. And when it came out, nobody looked at Amazing Heroes anymore but us older guys. And by older, I mean I was 25. This Wizard sort of, I don't want to say it created the 90s comic boom, but boy, it sure rode that wave. Then when he went over to DC, he edited at DC, and everybody who worked with him talked about how, especially when DC was going through big changes or things weren't all that great, he was the kind of the cheerleader for DC in the offices. You know, if you were having a shitty day, you'd go to his office and you'd leave feeling okay about your job. We've got people like that at all jobs. They're very needed. He's going to be missed by a lot of people. I don't know what he did when he went over to, when he left DC. He probably got a job not having to do with comics after being in comics forever and ever and ever. But, and I also want to put out there that if you are feeling suicidal, if you are feeling depressed, there are tons and tons of resources out there. But your best resource is go to your doctor. You know, just get a doctor's appointment. Let them know, because we've learned over the years, even since I got out of college, depression is mostly a physiological thing. They can look into, are your brain chemicals out of balance? Is there something physical going on with you? Depression can almost be a sign for serious illness as well. So if you're feeling that depression, if you're feeling that, yes, check in with your friends. Call suicide helplines, but get an appointment with your doctor. I cannot tell you how long I dealt with my generalized anxiety disorder, thinking, well, this is just how everybody feels, until finally the dam broke. And I was like, no, this isn't, I don't act the way other people do. This isn't normal. And my doctor was able to help me through, get me a prescription, and bring me to where I am now, where it's completely under control. It can be done, and it doesn't change who you are. All of my other freakings are very, very minor compared to that. My office job has gone completely batshit crazy. One of the clients I'm on, we normally have 10 people answering phones. Well, because of attrition and because of the current job market, et cetera, there are times we only have 4 people to take those calls, which means people have to wait 5 to 10 minutes to get to us. Of course, when you talk to them, I have been waiting on the line for 45 minutes. And I can look and see, no, it's been three. But they're upset. You get burned out because you're just boom, 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 boom. No chance to breathe between calls. No chance to do any of your other work. No chance to that. You know, one of those things where it's all, you know, when we get to this point, it's going to get better. Like with open enrollment, we could go, okay, open enrollment ends on this day. It'll get better after this day. But this is because we just don't have enough people. So you can't go, oh, it's going to be better in 2 weeks. Nope, it's not going to get better until we get more people. So I'm very, very stressed by the office job lately. When I watch stuff on YouTube, I get ads. Most of the time, I don't care because the ads are short. But there's one ad group that annoys the ever-loving shit out of me. Joe, have you seen the anti-vaping ads?
I have not been blessed with that ad yet.
Those ads make vaping sound like heroin. Once I started vaping, my life fell apart. I was stealing from my parents. It made my life horrible. Look. If vaping turns you into that bad an addict, that's a problem you have. And it's the same thing that when they do these scare campaigns where they make things seem so much worse than they really are. As a former teenager, I can tell you, we see through that shit immediately. Remember all the ads when you were in, you know, when we were teenagers about just one joint will ruin your life.
Yep. And I knew from Freak Brothers comic, that wasn't true.
I knew from people I went to high school with that it wasn't true.
Well, I didn't want to say I learned that at Boy Scout camp. But anyways.
Now, I didn't do drugs because, same reason I don't do, you know, them now. I don't trust the people who sell that shit. But I knew they're lying to me. Marijuana is not that dangerous. Marijuana is, you know, booze is more dangerous than marijuana. But, oh, no, the ads and everything telling you that, you know, well, once you start smoking pot, you're going to be doing heroin. No. When you do these scare campaigns, the problem is kids see through that. And then when you try to warn them about anything else, they're just going to roll their eyes at you. So tone it down, okay? I do like when they do the, you know, when you're vaping, you're putting chemicals in your lungs. I don't like the, once I started vaping, I was nervous all the time and my school life fell apart and I screwed over all my friends and my family hated me. And well, that's a you thing, not a vaping thing. And then the last thing I am freaking on, Joe, yesterday was the final new Conan comic from Marvel. King Conan number 3 by Jason Aaron. They had a nice essay about how Conan is moving on, how they'll be finishing up the omnibuses and finishing up the story in Savage Avengers. But the people who own the rights to Conan, it's not that the that Marvel didn't win the bidding. It's that they said, no, we're taking the rights back ourselves. We're going to do it ourselves. So kind of sad about that. I liked the Conan run at Marvel. And I like the fact that they kind of jammed him back into the Marvel universe, even though when they first announced it, I rolled my eyes and went, that's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. Well, I've actually read Savage Avengers. I've read the Conan miniseries set in the modern Marvel universe, and they were pretty good. I'm kind of sad that, you know, that once again, we're going to have all that Robert E. Howard stuff kind of yanked out of Marvel continuity. Because when Roy Thomas was there, they kind of mixed it in with everything. And with Conan coming back, they started mixing it in again. Went, nope. It's all gone now. Joe, what are you geeking on?
All right. Well, for geeking, I made it through a first full week of work without anything going bad. Everybody's like, well, big deal. I do that every week. I said, yeah, but I'm coming off of 4 weeks of my hernia surgery. And the only difference between that and the hip was that the hip, I was down for like a month and a half. I was getting up and getting better. The hernia took me about a week and I was doing okay. I couldn't get back to work for 4 weeks because the doctor wouldn't give me a release. So basically I spent 3 weeks puttering around. Ah, you can go back, listen to my geeking. I've realized when I retire what I'm going to do. I'm just, when I'm bored, sit in the basement and
eBay.
Bang away in eBay. It's what I like doing. It gives me joy, to cop a phrase. So when I got back, you know, it was tough. And then, of course, COVID revisited the house. So I was there for maybe 2.5 days, and I had to leave until I was sure I didn't have COVID. So that was kind of an abort. And again, I ran out of sick time 2 weeks into my 4 weeks. So when I'm home now, it's without pay. I've got money. I'm not worried about that. It's just, you know, just another, like Corey says, you know, you put another weight on things you got to deal with. Anyways, I got through my first week and, you know, I'm feeling much better now. Speaking of better, I want to give a public thank you to Corey. I reached out to him because I was having some shit coming down my way, mostly family related, which I'm not going to air here. And Corey, thank you. You at least, I didn't call him, but he read through the text and just let me vent. Something you can always do, reach out. I may not be online all the time. Corey may not be online ever because of the way your job is, but you're not alone. Just reach out. And Facebook sucks. Don't use Facebook. If you need to, pick up the phone and call, for crap's sake. Oh, I was having a geek day today. Okay, first off, I finished Stranger Things 4 with my wife. We watched it Tuesday. There were two episodes that dropped. The first one was an hour and a half. The second one was 2.5 hours. And we watched the first one Friday, and then at about 12:30, we thought, no, we're not going to do this. And we had to wait till, was it Monday night or Tuesday? No, Monday night we watched it. And it was good. I'm enjoying it. I don't know if you get Netflix, Corey, if you get a chance to watch it. What's fun about it are the constant 80 references, because you're going to go, oh, yeah, I remember playing D&D and people were calling it Satan's, making inroads to your kids and the hype and the superior. I'm not going to say anything else about Stranger Things 4. All I know, it's going to be a long freaking wait till Stranger Things 5, because the Stranger Things 5 is not, I guess I said this is the last one they're planning on doing. And they also,
but isn't there going to be a spinoff, right?
There will be other spinoffs, but where they left Stranger Things 4 is akin to Next Generation Season 3, Locutus. What are we going to do? Fire. That's all I'm going to say. Go watch Stranger Things 4. Oh, I watched Star Trek Strange New Worlds final episode today before this here podcast. Oh my. Geekasm. Oof. I need a change. It was awesome. Awesome. And leaves on a cliffhanger as well. Not a killer cliffhanger, but still one that you're going to go, how long do I have to wait for the next season? But the episode in and of itself was just fabulous. It hit every cylinder for me as I'm geeking over air. It's the first day it's out, so I'm not going to say anything else. Just then, like, it's just been a fantastic show. Love it, love it, love it. Last night, my wife and I went and finally saw the Elvis movie, which is amazing because my wife's a big Elvis fan, as am I. Minor freaking. The theater we choose, Oakdale Marcus Cinema, had a shooting last week. So it was kind of closed for a while they figured it out. Just two dumb assholes have to bring your freaking gun to a theater, even though it's not really allowed. And I don't know what, your popcorn wasn't salted well enough. Your friend took the last nacho. You had to shoot him. Whatever. I'm telling you. Okay, this is geeking. I don't want to get it. Anyways, we went. I don't know if because of the shooting, they're only doing nighttime shows. There was no matinees. Maybe that's common. I always thought matinees were more common than they were. Not a lot of people in the theater. We went and we just had our dinner there. You know, we went into the bar. which apparently you can do whatever you want. You can go into the bar, watch the ball game if you want. Nobody else is there. I love their pizza. Chris had a really decent, I think, Southwestern chicken style salad. Oh, I had 32 ounces of Angry Orchard cider. Yummy. So that was fun. It was just good to get in the movies. Good to see it. I've never seen, oh, what's the name? Moulin Rouge? Am I saying it? Moulin Rouge?
Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge. I've never seen that. And as you know, the director who did that did this. So my wife was really into it. I just rolled with the punches. It was very interesting. The only, again, minor freaking, they had the volume down a little bit. So, you know, when people were talking big, you could hear. And then when Tom Hanks was doing his real quiet Colonel Parker, it was tough to hear. I hate that. And, of course, I've got tinnitus, so it was just – I probably should have just gone and said, hey, would you tweak the volume up just a little bit? So this is going to be one of those that eventually when I see it on streaming, it'll be like, oh, I did not know they said that. Got the same problem when they did the second Batman, you know, where – you know, Catwoman and Penguin would talk real quiet. And then when I finally watched the VHS tape of it, I was like, oh, that's what they were saying. I did some geeking today. Again, another thing maybe to help you if you're feeling bad, just get out and go somewhere. Walk. See that there's more going on in your life than just the four walls pressing up against you. And I haven't done this in a while. Because I've violated the one rule of Shat. William Shatner says, always say yes. He didn't want to do another series, but it was work. He said yes, and that's how he won an Emmy Award for Boston Legal. He said yes. So finally, I just said yes.
Yeah. But he also said yes to Shit Your Dad Says. So you take the good, you take the bad.
With that was... And this is one of those where I'm always thinking, you know, you always talk about all the network execs, the bunch of nameless pinheads that don't know what they're doing. The series started to get interesting as soon as they brought in a female interest, interest for Shatner's character. I mean, it was the first part was, I agree. It was like, oh, this is not good at all. And then when they brought her into the mix, it actually kind of turned around. Unfortunately, way too late because people had already tuned out. I think Shelley Long had a series on CBS as well that I watched, and it was like, and then they brought in Terry Garr as her secretary, and it really turned it around, but it was too late. You know, you're not hit the floor running. So, and of course, it ended on a cliffhanger, which will never be solved, just like soap. Although soap I watch fondly. So I went geeking. I went over to the source, poked around there, went over to the Comic College. I did find them. They don't have their sign up yet, and they only had new issues up. So I was able to pick up 4 bong boxes. I guess I'll throw that in as a mini geeking. I basically had to take down one of my bookcases because it was slowly leaning to one side, which is never good when you have omnibuses on them. So we went to IKEA a number of weeks ago. My wife helped me put it together. So I took pictures of it. It's out on the eBay. It's out in the netherworld, Facebook, whatever. Just have all those omnibuses lined up. And my wife was like, I was going to do this for you, but you truly have a method to your madness when putting these together. I said, yeah, I'd like to have, you know, volumes 1 and 2 next to each other. So next time I run down to Steve Brown, the man without renown. Oh, no, he's a man with, oh, he doesn't have renown. He has nothing. Although, you know what? I heard he picked up a run of Fantastic Four. I mean, the whole damn thing. I haven't been down there to confirm that yet, but, oh. So anyways, I ended up with 2 short boxes extra, which tells you how much I had on that bookcase, well, and piled around it. So I got them put away. Today, I went out, did some more geeking. I went down. I had thought there was a store doing a $1 sale. So I figured I'd go down. I love $1 sales. Corey and I went to the show a couple weekends ago where we bought comics for a buck. I mistakenly thought it was Issues Needed, which is down in Apple Valley. A fantastic store. Tons of stuff. Every time I'm there, they're adding more stuff. I did see a copy of Marvel Super Stories with Electric Company number one in mint shape. And I was like, oh, I really, really want that. But I did pick up some other things. I picked up a ton. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. About 12 beat up but $1 issues of various Dell Gold Key books. Family Affair, Corky and White Shadow, which is a Disney property, Jungle Jim, Brave Eagle, Garrison Gorillas. I mean, I love photo covers. I love Dell 4-Color. Just for a buck, pick it up. A couple other cheap books. I picked up one called The Weirdos, which was a local creator, Dennis Fogan. And I found they had two copies for $10 each. Bring On the Bad Guys, the original, and Son of Origins. Not in the best of shape, but who cares? These are great. I would have died if they had heard the first one. That would have been like a... And then didn't they have a female one, too? Oh, to get all four of them. After that, I went to Half Price just to check out some stuff. And again, found a couple gold keys. A Horse Without a Head, Abbott and Costello, Meet the Bride of Hembeck, Dexter's Laboratory that has a Burger King logo on it, which I've never seen before. Just some cheap stuff for fun. Then I figured out where, well, I should say the guys at Issues Needed said, no, no, that's Mind's Eye. They got the dollars. I won't tell you what I bought from Mind's Eye. I will tell you I spent $470 on dollar books. That was fun. So basically what I'll be doing, like I do with everything, I'll be going through it, figuring out which issues I have, which issues I want, which issues I don't want, and then eBay the rest. So it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And if you're looking to go down there, they still got plenty of stuff. Finally, and again, another thank you for Corey. He borrowed me his copy of The Director Should Have Shot You, Memoirs of the Film Trade by Alan Dean Foster. My copy, of course, was stolen way back when someone stole it out of the back of my fake cop car. But keep it positive. Keep it positive. This was a fun book. I mean, he talks about mostly about writing movies, writing, I mean, like Dark Star, Star Wars, Aliens. Psst, didn't have a good time. Meeting stars, meeting guests. I guess he actually, in one of the books, he actually got thrown into costume and they filmed him, which I thought was kind of fun. Sometimes I remember, like, there was a movie called Outland starring Sean Connery, Peter Boyle, James B. Sisking. I don't remember watching it, but when I saw the book, I remember because I bought the book. And it might have been because I bought it because Alan Dean Foster wrote it, or just because it was a movie and I was buying movie adaptations back then. So a lot of fun stuff in here. He talks about other movies and things. I mean, he wrote the official novel, the blockbuster film for Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen. Interesting, very interesting book about not only writing, but also if you've like your Hollywood stories and things like that. So, Corey, I got to remember to get this back to you. I don't know if you got a chance.
Can keep it.
If you read it?
Yeah, I read it already.
Oh, cool. Well, tell you what. You out there in podcast land, you want this? Give me a yell and I'll mail it to you. Courtesy of Corey. Well, me, because I'm paying the postage. So, again, the directors should have shot you. Memoirs of the Film Trade by Alan Dean Foster. And, of course, as Corey and I talked about way back when it came out, we missed the signed copy by that much.
It was a fun book, but I don't think I'll ever read it again. So why do I need to have it? Exactly. Why does it need to take up space?
And I will probably go through it and I'll write down, go see the film Outland and some of the other films he mentions. Like, and the other one too, his one of his first things, Luana, L-U-A-N-A, that he, I don't want to, the story he writes about writing the screenplay for that is amazing. I've never seen it, but I've got to go look for how would you say it? Whatever.
I actually, the one he talked about that I want to read now is the adaptation of the Maud story where she gets an abortion.
Oh, yeah. And it was never published, so don't go looking for it, but he has it up. Is it in the university?
Yes, it's at the university where he donated all his papers. But I thought it was fascinating. It's, you know, at the time, this was a huge deal. Nobody had ever done a story like that on TV. And to this day, it's pretty rare that anybody does a story like that. But it was very much, you know, this was back when TV sitcoms would bring up these almost contentious issues and then have the characters debate them. Most of the time, they wouldn't have a resolution. It would just be, all right, we're just going to put it out there for people to talk about. But now I think comedies don't do that. Dramas will. But comedies don't do that. Although the last episode of The Simpsons this year was very much an episode about how consumerism and capitalism is destroying the world. Which I found fascinating.
If you do want to read that Maud Dilemma script, it's at the Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona, in the special collections of the Hayden Library. So I actually opened up there on page 45. That's all I'm geeking on, which probably is enough because now I got 470 plus new comics to read. Corey, what you geeking on?
Remember how I talked about how Conan was leaving Marvel?
Yeah.
They have announced the company that will be publishing Conan. Titan Books will be publishing Conan. They will also be bringing out new Conan novels. There hadn't been new Conan novels in quite a while. Back in the 80s, there were tons of Conan novels. They had, I think, like a new one every 2 to 3 months. And a lot of them were written by Robert Jordan, who went on to write the Wheel of Time series. So that's why when Wheel of Time started, it's like, oh, you're reading Wheel of Time? No, that's the guy who wrote those crappy Conan novels. But they're going to be produced by Robert E. Howard Productions, and then Titan will just be publishing them. A lot like what they do for Hard Case Crime. Hard Case Crime sort of generates the comics and the books, and then Titan's the one who publishes and distributes them. In a lot of ways, it's a lot like the old studio systems comics had back in the 40s, where it's, okay, we're going to contract the Iger studio. You're going to give us three comics a month. You produce them. We are the ones who publish and distribute them. So Conan is not going away. They're also going to be putting out 5 Conan omnibuses by the end of the year. In the announcement, Titan did talk about how they're going to be republishing older Conan stuff. And I wonder if that means that the Marvel epics are going to move over to Titan, if the omnibuses are going to move over to Titan, et cetera, et cetera. Ring of Honor, which went away a while back, was bought by Tony Khan, who owns All Elite Wrestling, has announced they're going to have a pay-per-view next month. No word yet on if they're going to get a weekly TV series, but every time it's brought up, Tony Khan says that they're working on it. They've got a number of options available. I have a feeling that they'll make the announcement at the pay-per-view. I would like Ring of Honor to come back, as long as it's done in the Ring of Honor style. I've talked in the past about how Ring of Honor was kind of the proving ground for tons and tons and tons of up-and-coming wrestlers through the 2000s, 2010s. It was where Bryan Danielson started. It was where CM Punk started. It was where Samoa Joe started. It was where Frankie Kazarian started. Adam Page, Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano, on and on and on. They were kind of where new talent showed up. And with WWE changing their NXT new talent to, yeah, we're not going to hire indie wrestlers anymore. We're going to try and get athletes in college who are interested in wrestling. That's all well and good, but if you want good professional wrestlers, they have to be trained and learn their craft out in the world so that they're not cookie cutters. So hopefully Ring of Honor is going to go back to being that. This is where the new wrestlers start. Also, TV-wise, I am 4 episodes from the end of Picard Season 2, and I am loving it. I love the fact that it is set in, basically, I'm going to spoil it. It's set in current day. They time travel back to our time. They have callbacks to other Star Trek time travel stories. There's so much good stuff in it. They did have a filler episode that when it was over, it was like, well, that was a waste of my time.
Which one was it?
The Picard is hit by a car and is in a coma.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was a waste of my time.
Yeah.
But if you've got one stinker in an entire season, I mean, come on, let's go back to the original Star Trek Next Generation. They had stinkers all the time.
Yeah. And it was kind of an, oh my God, what's going on next week? Nothing.
Yeah. Comic-wise, the Flashpoint miniseries over at DC. Remember how I said, this is just going to be a nostalgia pop, and I don't really care, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's not.
No.
The third issue came out, and it does tie in with Dark Crisis.
Yes.
It does tie in this other stuff. It really, and it's Geoff Johns playing in the DC universe. And Joe, he brought back the one thing that I think DC was stupid to get rid of. Hyper Time.
Ooh.
I always loved the idea of Hyper Time, which was that things just kind of, sometimes ideas kind of bounce in and out of the DC universe. It's not a continuity error. It's kind of because there are all these cosmic forces going on, sometimes things kind of spin out of the DC universe, or they kind of spin into the DC universe. And it was a Grant Morrison idea that he developed with Mark Waid, and Geoff Johns came in toward the end of it. And then DC was like, yeah, we're not going to use it because nobody here understands it. Well, it looks like Geoff Johns is going to actually use it and give it rules so that it makes sense. And he's also bringing in all of the Doomsday Clock stuff that was pulled out of the DC universe. So, and the last thing I am geeking on, there is a new Batman creative team. They started with the most recent issue, which is number 125. Let me pull it up here. It is written by Chip Zdarsky, who one of my favorite writers in comics. Absolutely love his stuff. And let me pull it up. Boy, you got to go quite a ways to get to who the artist is. Written by Chip Zdarsky, drawn by George Jimenez. And if you say, well, I haven't followed Batman since, you know, blah, 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 you don't need to. That was the good thing about this. Okay, everything starts here. We catch you up on the fact that, yes, Batman's not a billionaire anymore. Alfred is still dead. That's all you need to know. It did everything that a first issue should do in setting the table. By the time you read this issue, you know what the stakes are. You know who the players are. You know why they are doing what they are doing. it's something that a lot of comics tend to forget because they want to throw you in with the big shock. No, Chip does like he did with Stillwater. I'm bringing you into this story. By the time it's done, you'll know everything you need for the next however many issues this story goes. He doesn't change the status quo so much as tweaks it for his story to work. The backup is Catwoman, but it ties in with the main story rather than the Catwoman comic, and is also written by Chip Zdarsky for a first issue by a new creative team. I absolutely loved it, and it's the first time I've been excited about anything having to do with Batman since Tom King was on the book. And he introduces new villains.
Cool.
That's one thing that, hey, I like the fact that they're introducing new villains, because do we really need another Joker story? Another yes. this story? Another that character. Story? Nope. Bring in some new characters.
I could use
Believe it or not, kids.
Whoa, hang on a second. I want to cover a few comic shows coming up.
Oh, that's right.
You can be geeking. Thing. Yep, and only three. Again, if you've got something, we will focus on things, of course, in the Minneapolis, St. Paul area or Minnesota, because that's where we are. But if you know, we know this podcast goes all over. You got an event you want us to talk about, send us a quick flyer. Or better yet, send us some freebies. We like freebies. Anyways, up in Granite City Comics on July 21st, Alec Garza. Am I saying that right? Garza? Garza. I'm sorry. Put an extra Z in there. He is Artist Elite founder and, of course, an awesome artist. He'll be there 3 to 6 p.m. Minnesota Toy Posse's got their sale out at the Eagles 34. That's 2507 East 25th Street in Minneapolis. That'll be Sunday, July 24th, 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Bunch of people indoors, bunch of people outdoors. Always a fun place to go. Comics? Maybe. You never know what you'll run into. And then, of course, our new best friends, Minnesota Comic Exchange Comic Show. They got 30 tables out at Valley Creek Mall. That's out in September 17th, but we want to push it and let you guys know. It'll be 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And that's it for this week.
Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Thank you.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
You know why Thor didn't eat any of the pretzels at the party? He didn't want to get thirsty.
Joe, should I tell the joke that I can't tell to the pastor I work with at the group home?
Oh, who's Thor's favorite singer? MC Hammer?
No.
What his favorite food is? Tortillas?
No.
Why Captain America was avoiding Thor? He owed him money?
Nope. Aliens land on Earth. And they're friendly aliens. So first they meet with the scientists and they tell them all about the scientific advancements, all about the science that they've been able to explore and create. Then they meet with the people who do rockets and space travel, and they talk about how they were able to overcome space travel issues and how they're able to travel far distances. And finally, they're able to speak philosophy. So they sit down with the Pope. And the Pope asks, you know, do you guys know Jesus Christ? And the aliens say, well, of course we do. Jesus is a great guy. He drops by every couple of years. We have such a great time when he shows up. You know, every couple of years he comes by. We have a big party for him. He's just a blast. We love Jesus. Absolutely love Jesus. Pope's a little shocked. Because he finally says, well, we've been waiting over 2,000 years for the second coming. And the aliens say, oh, yeah, he always drop him by. When he shows up, we have a big party. And when he leaves, we give him his huge box of chocolate. He loves chocolate. What did you guys do for him when he was here? Hit my music.
Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
Damn, bitches!